This is another Rose Bridge project, and the work that was described by Yuyan was actually part of the work that we're doing in our lab. And I'm Nadozie, and if my name is difficult for you, you can call me Dozie. And if it's still difficult, call me Doozy. So I'm a Swiss cherry breeder at Washington State University. So I will use the next 5 to 10 minutes to talk to you about the work we're doing on understanding the genetic mechanisms underlying powdery mildew and bacterial canker infection. And you know, these are diseases that are, you know, of economic importance in cherries, particularly in the Pacific Northwest region. And I can tell you that bacterial canker is not so much of an issue in Washington, but it is in other parts of the world, and that's why we, you know, chasing after resistance to this disease. And but powdery mildew, I mean, is a problem all over the world, and in fact, even in Washington State alone, the growers spend close to $10 million per year to control this disease. And the other thing as well that that might interest you is that the different chemistries, you have to alternate the chemistries as well, because if you don't do that, if you use only one chemistry, there's a chance that you know, the pathogen, you know, we develop resistance to that particular chemistry. So that's why you have to alternate. But why, you know, this is becoming very interesting is because, I mean, in the 2 years in a row, our shipments to Australia have been rejected because of powdery mildew on fruit. So it's a big issue in Washington State. Oh, dear. Oh. Here we go. So that's going to be the outline for my presentation. There's no introduction there, which but I've already done the intro myself. So materials and methods, QTM mapping, functional haplotypes, and then, you know, conclusion. Yuan has already mentioned that we use the pedigree-linked, you know, population for this study, which is quite different from biparental populations used conventional QTL mapping. So here we have about 26 families, and that we have from between 15 and 20 seedlings per family. We also have parents of those individuals and then founders. So they are pedigree linked to facilitate a pedigree based analysis using a flex QTL. For genotyping, we genotype the individuals using a 6K SNP array, but about 1,100 SNPs out of those 6,000 were found polymorphic. So we use that to develop a genetic linkage map in combination with 4 SSR markers and S locus markers as well, and then our map would say is semi-saturated with an average marker interval of 0.4 centimorgans. And then for our phenotypic data, we phenotype for powdery mildew for 3 years, but we phenotype for bacterial canker for 1 year, and that was last year, and we've actually finished our phenotyping for this year, and we're still trying to collate and inspect the data for analysis. So that's not part of what I'm going to be talking about here. And for powdery mildew, we usually, natural infection is good in the field, so that's why, you know, we decided to phenotype for powdery mildew using a six-point scale from 0 to 5, with 0 being no symptoms and 5 moderate infection, and then 6 very high infection. And so we foliar infection, just to mention that foliar infection is different from fruit infection. In fact, fruit infection is much more complicated than foliar infection. So what I'm going to be talking about here is foliar infection, and we understand also that our foliar resistance doesn't translate into fruit resistance. And then for canker, we disease pressure in the field is low, so that's why we did the work in the greenhouses, and we inoculated detached leaves using the midrib wound method. And 2 days after inoculation, we started scoring for necrosis using a 5-point scale from 0, which is no necrosis, to 4, which is total necrosis on the leaves. And then for QTL mapping, we analyzed for powdery mildew, we analyzed the years separately, and in 2001 we found there were QTL on G5 linkage group 5 and linkage group 6, and in 2002 only on G5, and then in 2013 on G3 and G5. And the base factors, you know, were flex QTL is modeled using Bayesian statistics, so we don't use t-tests to, we use Bayes factor. So the Bayes factors we were getting for the QTL that I'd already mentioned, which would call major QTL above 5, so which means there's, you know, evidence that are strong evidence that these QTLs are real, they're actually not artifacts. And we also saw that minor QTL with Bayes factors between 2 and 5. So, you know, there's QTL there, but, you know, they not major QTL, the minor QTL, which we found on a linkage group 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7. And but we decided to combine the 3 years data and redo the analysis, and then we found one major QTL, the one on G5, which is consistent across years, and it has a phenotypic variation of 35%. So it explains about 35% of the phenotypic variation in the population, which we think is major. So that's why we're really chasing after this QTL. For bacterial canker, we also found and this is based on, by the way, based on 1 year's data, another QTL on G5, and that's why we very interested in G5. And then the base factor is above 10, which is, you know, there's a strong evidence that this QTL is there. And then for functional haplotypes, we use the SNP markers within the QTL confidence interval for haplotype construction and on G5. Where there's a major QTL, and there's about eight haplotypes also that are, we know that are linked to resistance, and these are found in different founders. And the ones in pink are the ones that are, you know, are probably linked to susceptibility. If you look at this arrow, is there any laser pointer here or something? Okay. So the arrow there, as it decreases, it means that resistance decreases. So that's only what that tells you. And then we're trying to find what's going on there, whether, you know, the QTLs have a additive or dominance effects. And here you have the resistant genotypes. You can see that the values between 0 and 1 is about 0.52 plus minus 0.9, but for the susceptible individuals is about 1.6 and plus minus 1.56. but when you try to combine the different haplotypes, if you combine resistance by resistance, is 0.12, which is really, really low. So we're suspecting that there could be some dominance, you know, we're going on there. And then if we combine resistance and susceptible, you have 0.597. But when you combine susceptible and susceptible, you have above 2. So this inadditivity going on there as well. So we try to do this to get some, you know, idea of what's going on, because in the past we something has been published about resistance in cherry, and that is pretty much dominant, but we've seen a combination of dominance and additivity there, depending on, you know, the populations that you're looking at. So we try to look at the genotypic probabilities, and they pre high, particularly for individuals that are resistant. So green there shows that they are actually in a heterozygote condition. So red there are susceptible individuals. So, and the probability is that this is the case is actually quite high. And then there are other sources of resistance that we brought in, and the probability is not quite high, but it's still a little high, where we're finding that the individual MIM17, which is Mazard immune seedling, which is a different source of resistance, is in blue, which means it's a homozygote. So it's not so high, so we're going to work on this, you know, again to find out if it's really, you know, where am I homo, but we kind of leaning towards that way, that is a homozygote, which will be really good for us if it is. And then this is the haplotype analysis for bacterial canker, where, you know, there's about 7 actually. I would take out this, which is about, the score is about 2.56, and probably focus on, you know, haplotypes 1 to up to here. And these were again constructed using SNPs in the QTL confidence interval. So to conclude, we found functional haplotypes from G5 for separately for powdery mildew resistance and bacterial canker. And interestingly, 3 of these sources were common to both powdery mildew and bacterial canker, and which is for us very, very interesting. But the other interesting too as well is that they both on linkage group 5. So because we have only 1 year's data for bacterial canker, we can't really make in a lot of inferences on this. But what we could say, we're excited that there are similar or identical haplotypes for both powdery mildew and bacterial canker. We're not sure if it's a case of pleiotropy or linkage, but after we've analyzed the second year's data, we'll find out. So in future, rather than analyze both data sets separately, we would like to find common haplotypes that we can use to select for both powdery mildew and bacterial canker, because I think our interest is really to do marker-assisted breeding or marker-assisted introgression using the same individuals for both bacterial canker and powdery mildew. And I think that's where I'm going to stop it. The moderator is already up, and we'll be happy to, you know, take your questions if you have any. Yeah, that's it. You mean for powdery mildew or for canker? No, we don't need natural infection is, with natural infection, we have, we can get what we want in the field, because, I mean, if you go out there, you see powdery mildew, so the disease pressure is quite high. So it's actually, yeah, so we don't really need to do detached leaf assay, but for bacterial canker, disease pressure is low in the field, and that's why we have to inoculate with the pathogen here in the lab using a detached leaf assay.